we have a quorum, so we'll begin. Half the audience are members of the Science and Technology Committee, I guess. And by the end of the evening, probably all of you will be. In 1975, the board, I think it was 1975, the board, in their wisdom, the board at Holden Village decided that in order to fulfill this.
It's a calorie analysis.
The stewardship of our resources here at Holden, that they formed a science technology committee, which would advise them relative to their program and their responsibilities here at Holden on matters within the disciplines that encompass science and technology. Perhaps a few of the questions that have been brought to us will help you understand some of our challenges. The energy crisis, of course, hits Holden very hard. It's an expensive process here, and we feel as good stewards that we should go as much as possible off hydrocarbon fuel, but that doesn't give us license to burn all the wood just because we got a lot of wood around here on our own land and here that we do it. We must be also good stewards of that. We look at energy conservation, and they ask us, you know, how can we do this better? We have the tailings here. Most of it is on forest company land, but it does impact on us. Can we do something about that? And we get a lot of wise answers on what to do with it. Everybody take a bag out when they leave. Or everybody that comes brings lime to put on it so it'll grow stuff. One of the really wise acres said, You make sermon timers, Golden Holden sermon timers. 18 minutes, huh? All of these things. And every congregation will buy one. And it'll be the only mine that ever opened up again to produce more mine tailings. Interestingly, an official in Valspar, Chemical Coatings, came here this summer, I think the title of tonight's talk was the Holden Science Technology Committee, what it's up to or down to, and how you can help. And a lot of people sitting out there help us. That's why we give a report. We usually have two formal meetings a year, in spring and fall. And then we also have, we take seriously the Biblical Commission that says wherever two or three are gathered, we have a science committee meeting. And we do, it's a continual process. But this Valspar official came here and he carried out a bunch of tailings, which we encourage people to do. And he went back to the company and wrote us a whole letter on what he did. And this is a paint that has a lot of tailings in it. And it's non-slip. And it's rather interesting. And he told us how to use it. We'll pass it around. But I want it to come back here. If we go into Lucerne, what do we do about that? We have trees on our land. We have trees down the whole corridor, which is vital to our continuance. What is the best utilization of that? How do we go off hydrocarbon fuel? And what about fish production? What about education? Have we got enough wind here, other than in this room, that we can harness for power? Can we really fully utilize our water power? We run out of it in the winter. Are there other sources of power we can utilize? How about solar? And so we have. If you've been around, you've seen some solar collectors. So there's been a lot of activity. We have a bulletin board up here. And we also have a suggestion box. And it was plumb full when we emptied it today. And we answer all the questions and all the suggestions that have a name on them. We look through all of the suggestions and address them. We take cognizance of them. The only ones we don't do anything about are those that say drop dead. or things like that. And tonight, what we're going to do in the next 26 or 7 minutes, we're going to have some representative reports on some current issues that challenged us now for at this time. And we're going to have reports on these to bring you up to speed. And then we're going to use the rest of the time for you to ask us questions and make suggestions and tell us where we should go. And I thought and we don't always follow your advice, just like the board doesn't necessarily follow our advice. I thought it'd be most appropriate to begin with Werner Jansen, who's a member of the Science Committee and also business manager for Holden Village. And he will update you because to answer some of the most common questions relative to what are you doing about hydropower that we've been hearing about? What about Lucerne?
What was the third thing?
Tailings. Yeah, what about tailings? Those are three questions always asked us. So now he's in the next 6 minutes, he's going to summarize it.
Of course, we've been working on the tailings for 20 years and haven't made much progress, so it's going to be hard to summarize it in a short time. But there is a real interest in rehabilitating the tailings. The Forest Service is very anxious to do something about it, like on a number of projects. It's a matter of money and priority. And they have a plan that's been formulated. They have an environmental assessment report that's been issued and approved, and it's just a matter of trying to break enough money loose. It's a much bigger project for the Forest Service than they can do on a budget item from the region, so it really takes money appropriated by Congress to start on it. We're anxious to work with them on a couple of reasons. For one thing, that our present sewage system depends on the tailings for evaporation ponds and also sprinkling area for reducing the amount in the lagoons. And this also ties into the rehabilitation of the tailings, because where we can sprinkle, we've gotten a very good crop of grass to grow in the ground cover, and then the natural grasses and shrubs start in that area as long as there's a ground cover to catch the seed. So we feel that that's one area where Holden Village and the Forest Service can work together on a cooperative project. Also on the number two tailings, we can possibly meet another need of the village, and that's the additional hydroelectric power that we need to run, especially the early summer and the late summer and the winter time when we don't have enough power to do all of our heating and hot water heating with electricity. We're still forced to use some oil and quite a bit of wood for heating and hot water heating in those periods other than May, June, July, and August. So the number two tailings, we talked about putting a reservoir or a storage capacity on top of that of about 20 acres and having a hydroelectric plant at the base of that. The water would be gravity fed to the top of the tailings with a 30-inch pipe coming from about the wilderness area on Railroad Creek. And this would provide us a considerable more power than we can get out of our present units on a year-round basis. Lucerne is another possible expansion of the Ministry of Works. I think a lot of you have either seen or read some information on this. The process that it's in right now is the Forest Service felt that it was necessary to go into what they call public interest determination. We'd actually been working on it with the Forest Service for a couple of years, submitted a proposal in January of 1979. They reviewed it for approximately a year, and then the regional office in Portland decided that this competitive interest determination would be necessary to determine if there's any other parties that are interested in it. Since it's public land, it's really not feasible in most cases to allow only one proposal to be considered. So now we're in the process of rewriting the proposal. The proposals are due the end of December. There very likely will be other proposals other than Holden submitted, and then it'll be up to the Forest Service in the first couple months of '81 to determine which proposal they'll choose for development. So we really have nothing more to do with Lucerne until that decision is made. End of report.
Thank you very much. The probably is not necessary to remind you that our presence here and our continued presence here depends a lot on having an adequate sewage plant, and that can stop us, and so that's very critical to us. And if we don't have, for example, good solid waste disposal, that if we don't can't do it here, to haul it all out of here is also an expensive process. So these are issues that we continue to address. Now, let's have a report on our management plan for the forest from Dave Larson, who's himself, he joined us first as an economist and financial advisor to the committee, and he's a tree farmer, and he's going to give that report for the committee. He's going to take 9 minutes. Aren't you, Dave?
That shows what happens shows what happens when you wear a red suspender to get assigned to the forestry project.
Where are they?
But this, for those of you who have been here before and heard our reports in prior meetings, this is the first time that we're giving a forestry report. And the big event that happened in the last year that makes this possible is that Howard Gilling and his son James found the mining monument on which the old mining claims were measured from. And this year, for the first time, we have a survey of the old mining claims. Now, when Holden Village was given the improvements here by House Sound Mining Company, they were also given something over 200 acres of patented mining claims that does not happen to be the land that the village situated on, but it included the ore bodies and is primarily the land above and to the far side of the area where you see the old mine buildings up on the hillside. Now, at the lower elevation of those mining claims, there is a very good stand of trees. We found out for the first time that we also own part of the old miner's village. And that area was bulldozed by the Forest Service. The old miner's residences were burned. And as you can see when you walk down towards the ball field, that area has been allowed to grow up in brush. Now, as was mentioned earlier, Holden is working very hard at becoming independent of fossil fuels. And you just simply look around you and you immediately conclude that one of the sources of energy that is available to us is wood. And this is useful to hold in for a variety of things. We've got the fire burning in front of us. Obviously, heat from burning wood rather than burning oil. We use it for building materials. As you know, we have a sawmill, we have a planer, and I think it's approximately half of the wood that will be going into the addition out of this building comes from our own property or near Brown's by property that we have milled ourselves. The new footbridge that you saw is an example of use of wood around this area. If we get the use permit for Lucerne, we will have the need for a great deal of wood for new building projects. We also have the possibility of using wood to produce fuel for vehicles. Now, that's not the most efficient way to do it, but it is using the energy source that we have at hand, and it is feasible for us to do it, whereas it might not be if you have to live in the middle of a metropolitan area. Now, as you drive up to Holden Village, you come through about a 12-mile corridor that is Forest Service land. And as you will notice the trees there, that is an example of an over-mature forest. If you look at the tops of those very tall trees, you will notice that many of them are dead. And of course, when a tree starts dying from the top down, it's only a matter of a few years before it's a dead snag. Now, Holden for many years has been buying its wood from the Forest Service. We buy the dying or dead standing trees. We get it at a very low rate and cut it ourselves. And up to this point, our use of the forest has been on taking material out of the forest. Obviously, there is at least a theoretical limit to how long you do that before you've used up all the readily available trees. And so we have now concluded that it's time that we enter into a forest management program where not only will we continue to harvest particularly the dying trees, but that we will concern ourselves with the next generation of trees. And we will start with Holden's own land. And again, using the areas that are readily visible as we walk around the village, going down towards the old miners' village, we will clear out brush to give the natural seedlings, conifer seedlings, the evergreens, a chance to grow into the next healthy crop. And we will probably do a certain amount of transplanting. As you notice along the roadways, if you walked away from the village, there's just a lush crop of new seedlings growing in along the road. And of course, they're very, very close together. Many of them are going to be killed by the snow plows and by the road graders and so on. And since they're from the same area, at the same elevation, we can probably successfully transplant many of these small seedlings into the area where we want the next crop of trees to grow. We will also enter into a joint management program with the Forest Service for the Forest Service land in the corridor from Holden Village down to the top of the switchbacks. Now, we've been doing this on an informal basis for years, but because of some designations such as a wilderness area and so on, we think that it's timely that we enter into a more formal plan where, for example, we will identify those locations where there is a lovely outlook of the mountains, such as you have several places along the switchbacks. And those areas, for example, we will keep open so that they aren't the places where we will either allow brush to grow up or to plant new trees. Then there are other areas, particularly where there was logging below the tailings, where a lot of brush has grown in, and it appears that the tailings that have blown off, blown down stream, have begun to crust, so the natural seeding is impossible to start. And we'll go into those areas probably with a bulldozer, break up the crust, and then replant new evergreens, young evergreens. Anything else we should talk about?
Yes. We also, as part of this, we'll be, did you mention thinning and taking the diseased things out of our own land? And also on these trails, we plan to label at least two trails. We Nature Trail, and then maybe the 10-mile, we will have labels on the various trees so that you'll know what kind of trees are here or will grow in the state of Washington, so that it's part of our part of our responsibility is also education.
Poland is a rather unique place in that we have examples of almost all of the timber trees that grow in the state of Washington that are growing here naturally. You probably noticed that there are a great variety of trees in this Holden area.
So that takes care of that, and Dave, in his discussion, mentioned the use of wood as a possible source of power for vehicles, and Mark Adams has many areas of interest, and one of them, he's been, since our last meeting, been really looking into producer gas as a source of power for vehicles. We have looked at many sources of power for this. We looked at we're looking at hydrogen. We looked at steam engines. We looked at alcohol production, and electric mobiles. Tonight, Mark will briefly describe for you the producer gas.
As you all know, we are in a critical and vulnerable position with respect to petroleum fuels. And for that reason, we have to look immediately for means of vehicle propulsion. The hydrogen is viable because we can generate it from water by electrolysis, but that is down the road a piece. The wind power would be used for production of electricity, which leads us to electric vehicles. But that again is a matter of economics in obtaining the vehicles, and that of course is something that is down the road and can be used. The one that can be put into almost immediate use is taking a leaf from the books of the people were involved in World War I, where they ran out of petroleum products, World War II, and even in some areas of the world at the present time, where petroleum products are scarce, unavailable, economics won't let them purchase it. They use what they call producer gas. This is taking carbonaceous product, which in this case is wood, and putting it into a furnace, an enclosed container. Then you get the wood up to temperature, and probably be hot like you have right here in the furnace. You close off the oxygen supply and provide steam in controlled amounts, and you will produce a gas from this that is primarily carbon monoxide, which is combustible, some hydrogen, small amount of methane, and these gases are combustible, and then there will be some carbon dioxide formed. There will be some nitrogen present because of the nitrogen in the atmosphere that is drawn into the system. This gas is fed directly into the carburetor of your existing vehicle. So there'd be no change, might be some minor changes in carburation. Don would probably argue, I think Don Wagner, our mechanic, as to how simple this is going to be. But it is used, and it is a viable mode of getting the fuel. The one thing that you would note if we go into this is some type of an appendage on the outside of the vehicle. It could be a tank attached to the side of the cab. It could be a trailer that is pulled behind, or it could be like in France where they had a little platform built out on the back of the vehicle that held the furnace. you stoke up in the morning, and it has to be hot, therefore it isn't something that you can turn on and off like your foot throttle, but...
wouldn't be good for a fire engine.
In any event, it is something that that we can, the furnace can be built in our own shops, and the utilization of this with the vehicles here at the village could be something that would be within a foreseeable time period, a possibility of having, we plan to have one in operation next summer. We want to use it on a vehicle that is in pretty much constant use. And the, thinking about this, we decided that the one that would be moving most of the time is our garbage truck. So that would probably be the one that would get the first use. If it is on a trailer, then it could be transferred from one vehicle to another one. Many ways that could take advantage of it. We get about half the power per engine that you would get from the same engine with gasoline or diesel. And so there would be very little likelihood that, that we would attempt to power one of the trucks from Lucerne up to the top of the hill, for example. That is a pretty steep climb. But at the top of the hill, we would have a transfer station and have people get out of the one vehicle and into another one, or possibly stop long enough to hitch on our trailer onto the back of the truck vehicle and come on up the hill. I suspect that that our first effort will be primarily with the garbage truck.
Okay, very good. And also maybe on a barge, if we go to a barge, would be probably an appropriate use for it. Now, we're into a lot of other things. As a veterinarian, of course, I'd like to see it go to horsepower and pigs and use more animals.
Unless you clean the diapers.
But at least we got some pigeons up here. We got homers, and we're establishing up homers so that we can communicate with the outside world. I don't know why we want to do that, but some people want to. And so we can get messages back and forth, and we've also made the suggestion, I think it's one of the more brilliant things the Science Committee has done, is that when we send out, people go out from the hike house up in the high country, and if they run into trouble, they all take two pigeons with them, and they send one back with the message, and then they eat the other one. What has happened here is that our science committee, I never know how many are on it. They're never all here at once. And some of you out there maybe sitting on various times, people drop in on us, and they're always offering us suggestions. And an example of this, I think, is about 2 years ago, I think the gang of four from Manson. No, not really. A group from Manson came and joined us, and it's been a great experience for us. Well, Marion Baumgartner and Ed Grimes and the Overbees. Ella finally got Joe here last couple of years ago. Ella's been coming here like I have for the last 50 years. She started when she was 3. But they've been, for example, what do they do for us? Well, they've helped us on, for example, to get pipe. If we're going to a big project with 30-inch pipe, I don't know if you priced it lately. I don't know why you would, but if you have, it's very dear. Costs like sin. Some of you know what that costs. They found some up here that we can get for digging out up the line here. So you see, and also they're always in alert for other things like generators that we'll need. And so this has been most useful to us. And to give you some kind of a feel for, before we open up for questions, on the other expertise, like Bill Matheson, just at my right here, is a professional engineer. He's into mining. He's a consultant engineer, physicist, and he addresses many aspects of it. And Al Hoverson, soil scientist. This, of course, is very important to our tailings, and he has worked on the tailings, and we've had other consultants in. You know, how much of the tailings disappear, and we've made measurements on how much of it and where it goes. And also how to reestablish them. And Al, for example, set up this garden out here where you see flowers blooming. It's raised on tailings out here.
Really?
Just to prove to you that, you know, you can grow it. If you go up on the tailings, the U.S., I got to get this right now. We didn't acknowledge him before. The Bureau of Mines, they helped us originally to set up some plots to reestablish vegetation on the tailings. And we can do that. Over on the right is Jim Scrindy, a civil engineer, and with emphasis on sanitary. Well, he's going to be very much involved if we go to Lucerne. And one of the first things there, for example, is we have to build a marina as part of our, anybody that goes in there, and Lucerne has to build a marina with 15 slips of a certain size. Well, what about the wave action? What kind of apparatus are you going to build there? Well, he's done a study for us on that. And his father, Ray Scrindy, is retired out of the U.S. Corps of Engineers in a responsible position, and is a hydraulic engineer, so he knows hydraulic system, hydro plants. And so that's very useful to us. And Dorothy Halverson. No relation, a wife. a good friend, too. And she keeps us honest. She's also a nutritionist. And Roger McClellan's a consultant to us, one of the authorities in the world on energy and by environmental impact of energy utilization and on inhalation toxicology. What is the hazard of getting out there and breathing this stuff all the time? He's done analysis on that. And Terrell Chang, who's not here, is very good in fish culture and solar. And I think you should tell him what's going on next door here, because I think this is significant as we look at the winter community, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think you should mention that. And also on what has been saved here in hydrocarbon fuel just this last year. I think you should tell them that before we open up for questions.
We're in a 3-year conservation program to try to reduce our consumption of diesel fuel specifically. And in the first year now, we've managed to save about 30,000 gallons of diesel fuel. The last phase of the project will be the completion of the addition to Koinonia, which you see being erected at the present time. And that will become the new winter dining room and kitchen facility. And then we will be able to close down the hotel building, which is the largest consumer of diesel fuel that we have. And up to now, with the size of the community, about 70 people stay throughout the winter. We have no other facility to use, and so we're forced to keep the dining hall open. We've tried to do a lot of conservation with the fuel that's used, and we've done, a respectable job, but still we have to use diesel fuel. We have no choice about that. So we're hoping that by the time the third year is finished in our 3-year plan and we're occupying this building during the winter, that we'll have our consumption of diesel fuel from about 42,000 gallons a year down to maybe 5 or 6,000 gallons.
So that gives you kind of a flavor for the thing. We have a lot of fun, of course, and throughout the year, and meetings here, And then they bring in people to if the board approves of to do the work that you see. So we have the fun and they do the work. And that's a good job, you can get it. And I feel very good about the science committee because if we had to pay them, none of us could afford it. So we're open for questions, suggestions, comments, constructive criticism. It's the only kind I accept.
Leo, is there any resource in the mine, how the metals are gone up in price so much, or any?
Yes, we should. I forgot to mention Rudy Edmonds, who you all, many of you have been here. He's a very important member of our committee, and is a geologist and knows a lot about that. There has been pressure on us to reopen the mine in times past, and we have analyzed some of the tailings that did not have the gold extracted early, to see is it feasible at this stage to try to recover some of that. It is not at the present time, at least the present analysis. But there is still a lot of ore around here, and we own some of that. We would resist probably opening it unless it was a national emergency at this stage. I think that's the philosophy.
There's a board motion that the mine would never be reopened unless a national emergency.
That is for mining.
Yeah, right.
But the science committee, there's a good deal of sentiment on some certain members of the science committee to reopen it. And we have done a study on what it would cost to reopen the mine for other reasons. Growing mushrooms, storage material, and for tours for people to tell you about what's going on. We priced it out. The thing that held us off initially was not only cost, but the safety of it. But it's still under study. It's sort of on the back burner. So that's where we are now. Yes?
When you talked about producer gas,
yes,
you mentioned it being used as it was produced or something. Would you envision then in using it, let's say, on the garbage truck? No, you mentioned in France, as if you have a furnace and produce the gas and it's utilized in the motor at that time. But let's say for the use you imagine at Holden, would it work that way, or would you produce it and then store it in the tank and use it later?
The problem with storing it is the carbon monoxide and the hydrogen both are very difficult to liquefy, to compress. And if you're going to store it, you'd want a compressor system. Now, if you were of my age, you would recall the old city gas systems that used producer gas, and they had these great gasometers, gas storage tanks that had the floating tanks on them, and that's the way they stored the gas in order to distribute it. You could store it in big gas bags, and this has been done. You put a big gas bag on the top of the car,
have a blimp on top of it.
for storage of it. It has been tried. But the simplest way is to go ahead and generate it on the vehicle and turn the engine on.
About how long does it take to get up the temperature, or so you could drive the vehicle then, approximately?
Oh, I would guess the 15 minutes.
Yeah, that was my experience in North Africa in the war. Get out there and stoke it up in the morning and
heat your coffee,
drink it, and then take off.
It wouldn't take near as much time as a harness and his horse.
I ride him bareback.
The fish culture.
The question on fish culture. Yes, we're very interested in this. We've now, what is it, 2 or 3 years we've had them.
4 years.
And we found out they do very well. Even and have taken them through the winter, and a couple of them escaped, and they're up in. I don't know if I should tell you.
No, I won't tell you where they are.
And so they do all right. We've proved that it can be done, and we're very interested in this. Of course, if we went to Lucerne, And it's also very good educationally, and people like to feed fish. Not the way you do on an ocean liner, but you know the way. And so that's received a great deal of interest. We're looking at worms. We had a real bright idea for a while to feed them. We'd have a lamp up there that would attract bugs, and it'd attract them, it'd kill them, and it'd fall in the fish tank, and then the fish would eat them, and you'd have a, you know, except there weren't enough bugs, too many fish. That's one reason we went to worms. We had a disaster, a couple of disasters. Both happened in the spring. That tank we have wasn't built for fish. Built for these nuts, sauna nuts they call them. So they put the fish in it, and in the spring when it's a thaw, some of the toxic material from the tailings and all wells up through into the tank, into the cracks in it. And in a very matter of a few hours, the fish sort of go belly up, and people hesitate to eat them then. But some of them said they're all right. That's a solvable problem. So that's where we are on that. We have Lauren Donaldson is a consultant to this. Lauren Donaldson is one of the better known people. He developed the Donaldson trout and other things, University of Washington. He likes to come up here, and he will be counseling with us as we move into the Lucerne operation, if that's where we're going. Yes?
Is there a practical way to use solid waste to generate energy up here?
who runs the field, Adam?
There is, but we don't produce enough of it to generate enough energy to do anything with. We're too small for that, and we're too big to ignore it. So
it's a problem. So we compost it and like to feed it to the worms.
If we could teach the worms to fly, we could still use those bug lamps.
Oh yes, over here.
With your worm story, or is that from
underground movement? No. You belong to the science committee. I have to put up with that all day. You're the expert on worms, Al, or do you want to? We got a couple of worm experts here. All right, Werner, you feel that.
Well, none of us are experts. We're not even sure if they're still around. We keep feeding them. We're not sure what's eating them. The worms can be used very efficiently for this disposal of garbage, even in your own home situations. And they'll eat, the red wiggler or the garbage worm will eat about a pound of garbage per pound of worms per day. So you have to figure out how many pounds of garbage you have, and then... get that many jobs. Here we probably have about 300 pounds of worms, and there's about 2,000 worms per pound, so that's a lot of worms that you need to. And for a city that has much more, they've done it on a large scale. I think down in California they did it for a year in a city of 60,000, used earthworms to dispose of their garbage. And the advantage is that you end up with a very high quality compost that's a saleable item, or to be used in flower beds, potting soil, an excellent soil producer of the earthwork. So this is what our interest is, that we're trying to come up with a method of utilizing our wet garbage for something other than a negative problem. And composting is one, earthworm is another possibility. So.
And we'll probably expand our composting roller drum type thing.
Are the tailings leaking that toxic material down into the stream all the time? Is it coming out of the...
Very little. They did a study in 1974, an engineering firm out of the coast did a very extensive study, and I think they were surprised themselves that very little material was being percolated down into the stream. The biggest problem pollution-wise has been the wind pollution that's carry the tailings, you know, off into the forest or into the stream. The biggest problem they've worried about over the years, but never occurred, is a 50 or 100-year flood, as they define certain cubic feet of water in a 50 or 100-year flood. And if that would occur, it could erode into the tailings quite seriously, because the cribbings that the mine originally put in there to protect the tailings have all deteriorated. And it could carry large volumes of tailings down the stream and then into the lake. Now, it's interesting that even during the mining days, they did studies on the effect of what would happen if large quantities of tailings would go into the lake. And they concluded that, at least at that time, and I don't know if the conclusion would change, that there would be very little effect on Lake Chelan if the tailings were put in there. They even talked about disposing of all the tailings with a sluicing them down the lake and into the or sluicing them down the stream and into the lake, and they said that the effects would be very short lived, because the lake, of course, is very deep, 1,600 feet deep. But they never went ahead with that because they were never sure what the effects were going to be.
Do trout live in the stream below the tailings?
Yes.
Oh, they are.
We don't know the number below versus above, but they do. In fact, there's been some fairly good catches at the mouth of the stream in the very recent past.
The contamination that you're concerned about, of course, comes from the drainage from the mine itself.
Yes. There is a small drainage from the mine itself, which isn't.
Is that drainage heavily mineralized or not?
Yes, we did analysis on that. There's some zinc in it. And
copper.
Copper.
Also arsenic.
Arsenic. Mm-hmm. Yes, question back there.
Can you say more about what is in the Holden proposal for Lucerne development?
Yes. We'd be pleased to do that, and Werner can summarize that for you.
We're in the process of rewriting it. As I mentioned before, that we wrote a proposal and submitted it to the Forest Service in 1969. And it's sort of hard to explain, because we're not sure exactly what it's going to be. Just like Holden, we had a facility and didn't know what was going to happen, you know, when it started out in 1961, and it really developed as the needs and the desires and the inputs of the people arose. Well, I guess we see Lucerne as somewhat the same thing. First of all, I guess it's important to point out that Lucerne would definitely be a ministry that would be involved with Holden. It's not an attempt of Holden to get into a public resort. On the other hand, it's going to be a ministry that deals more with the public than Holden would be. The one way that John has explained it, and I think it's a good concept to help understand it, is that the village really is more oriented towards the church. That most of the people that come up here, by and large, are associated with the church. They're coming here knowing the Christian orientation of the village, and the program is that. Down at Lucerne, it would be a ministry, but geared more to the general public. That there would be a small community that would be formed at that location, and the program really would be the lifestyle that would be created. So that in this day and age, where there's a lot of discussion and a lot of need for even experimenting with different lifestyles, you know, how we don't know what the lifestyle is going to be in, you know, another 50 years. We may not be able to have individual homes like we've had, and you know, heat with the same type of fuels and so forth. Well, maybe Lucerne could be a ministry that would be encouraged by Holden, but would be, in a sense, an experiment of lifestyles. And at the same time, the one thing that might be available then to help finance this experiment would be the public. As they come through and need gas for their boats, want to visit the restaurant, need hiking materials and things like this. There might be other cottage industries that would be involved down there. So it would be very much public oriented. It would be an experiment, in a sense, in lifestyles. It would be a ministry. There would be a community, a worshiping community down there that would still have the same disciplines of worship that we have up here, but it would be a much smaller community. The transient part of the community would be the public that would be coming through. You wouldn't register down there for a program. You might be able to get a cabin down there for a vacation and then be able to observe or even be a part of the community for a small time, but not in a sense to attend a program like up here.
And we feel very strongly that, we have a mission relative to conservation. And it would be a demonstration center relative to conservation, because the whole architecture of it will be one of conservation and also addressing, for example, the handicap that could come in there. This is more difficult here for the handicapped, if you're in a wheelchair or blind or something. So we are also address that. And a very exciting part of it is that we've already worked on the old schoolhouse down there to make a mining museum. And I mentioned Marion earlier, Marion Baumgartner, and we have several people on an advisory committee, and it's chaired by Rudy Edmonds, to develop a mining museum. And we're already collecting up the material for it. It's a very exciting project, because there isn't a mining museum sort of really specifically addressing that in the Cascade area. And there's a lot of interest in it. And so we're really excited about that. And it's sort of a historic building, the old schoolhouse down there.
Does Rudy envision having it contain anything other than Holden memorabilia?
Yeah.
Other Cascade mining relic?
Yes.
Probably confined to the uplake region, like maybe south of Tahican, but include like Meadow Creek across the lake that had some mining claims and activities. Lucerne itself was, in a sense, developed as a result of some mining claims. Crown Point Falls up above here was an active mine for a few years.
Martin Ridge,
of course, the Holden mine, so it would include the whole valley across the lake.
Any other questions? I can't see real well. Up in the recesses of the peanut gallery, but just shout out.
Yes, what success have you had with your solar projects thus far? I know you have several.
All right, the first one was a scholarship to a student who came here and built the first one. That's the preheater now for your upriver sauna. And that, I guess, does preheat when the sun's out. So that, I guess, works. Do you want to address the one? We built a series of them for the hospital.
This past winter, Tom Halverson and some of the other people in the village constructed 12 solar panels. Their design that came out of a group from Seattle, but it's a very common design that you'll find in a lot of periodicals and magazines, do-it-yourself type of system. 12 were constructed, starting out with a 4-bay sheet of 3/8 plywood, building a wooden frame, insulating it, using steel corrugated roofing material for a collector, mounting copper tubes on the collector, and then insulating or glazing over this. We figure that we're getting about 800 to 900 gallons of 100 to 120 degree water in a 5-hour heating day, and that's about what we have in midsummer. And this again, we put them on the hospital building because that's the only building in the main part of the summer that we use diesel fuel to heat the water, and that's our main laundry for the building. It uses large quantities of water. We, in a home situation, you could probably get by with 120 degree water, but because of the health regulations, we have to have at least 140 degree water for the laundry. So we still have to run the hot water into an oil heater into the cold side and then boost it up another 20, 30 degrees. But it does save large amounts of oil. We don't have any data exactly on how many gallons we're saving.
And then we're also going to passive solar on the south end of this addition.
What will you do for winter time, night time, to kind of keep the heat in?
Well, the system is operated by a differential thermostat, so that when the water coming out of the heaters is cooler than what's already in the tank, it shuts itself off.
I was thinking about this here, south of...
Over here? Yeah, it'll be really an extension on the end of the building, which will be built out about 3 feet. There will be doors on the original section, then there will be a 3-foot section, and then there will be sliding glass doors beyond that, and that 3-foot section, in a sense, will be the collector. And the hot air that's trapped during the daytime will be circulated down into a heat a retention tank, whether it's rocks or some of the newer heat-absorbing salts that are available now. And then when the sun is down or heat isn't available, it'll be pumped back into the building. Whether we'll go to, you know, some type of shades, but in a sense, the building will be insulated from the solar part, so that even when the you know, the sun is down, we're not going to be, you know, losing everything. So,
in this regard, part of the duties of the science committee is to keep up on these various fields to look for better materials or better heat sinks, and because there's a lot of developments going on now.
You get a lot of sun shining here in the winter time, or do the mountains kind of?
It's bad news in the winter.
Yeah, it's marginal. The only reason that we probably could justify doing it is that it becomes an educational model, for one thing. Also, our electricity, it sort of matches the sun fairly well, but our electricity keeps going down all through the winter until about the 1st of May. But the sun starts coming up again about mid-February. In about the 12th or 15th of February, the sun has gone high enough in the horizon so it goes over Buckskin again. And that's a big day in the village when we finally have sun from about 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. So that already by mid-February, we do have an increasing amount of sunshine, not as many cloudy days. The sun is higher in the horizon, but the electricity is still dropping off at that point, so we have to keep using more wood until the 1st of May. So we're hoping to get enough use out of the sun from mid-February on to justify it. Then also for an educational model for people to see and get some ideas for your home situation.